Hello and welcome to the TES News podcast. I'm reporter Dave Speck and we've got the usual team joining me. We've got Mary Louise Clues, deputy news editor. Mary Louise, hello.
Hiya.
We've got news editor Will Stewart. Hi, Will.
Hello.
We've got reporter Amy Gibbons. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
We've got reporter Catherine Love. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Now, remote teaching. A year ago, a lot of teachers would have thought that was a year out in a school in the Himalayas. But how the world has changed, eh? And a TES survey has today shed some light on how teachers are coping with it. And it seems that around two-thirds are coping. 27% said it was okay, 29% said it was better than I feared, and 7% said it was great. However, the other third did say it was a problem. And one of the things I saw in the comments from our TES survey was the increase in workload in preparing online lessons and, you know, getting to grips with the new ways of working. Some teachers were saying, you know, they're getting eye strain. Some teachers were missing contact with the pupils. But yet others were saying, well, there's no commute to work in peak time. We've got better class control. So that's certainly worth a read on our website. But I mean, we've got a couple of other stories as well around remote learning. And I wanted to start with you, Amy, on this one. Why are live lessons proving so popular, Amy? I mean, live lessons, that is, as opposed to just online lessons.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so the main distinction would be, yeah, whether they're delivered live or whether they're sort of pre-recorded. It's divided some of the, like, the really senior figures in the education sector, like Gavin Williamson and Ofsted, with Gavin Williamson saying that live lessons are the way to go, best form of teaching. And Ofsted's saying perhaps it was an unhelpful myth that they were the best way. So in general, it's proved slightly controversial, but actually our survey suggested that there's a general consensus among teachers that live lessons are preferable. So we had 39% of teachers said that it was their preferred choice for delivering remote education. And that compared to the next highest was 19% said they were partial to pre-recorded lessons. So teachers do prefer live lessons, it seems, from our research. And I think the main reasons for that were to do with them being a bit more engaging and helping them to connect with the kids. Because if they're not there in the classroom, it's nice to have that sort of live interaction with them. So, I mean, some teachers said it's lovely to see the children. Something as simple as that, I think, can make a big difference. And then others saying, you know, engagement and attendance is so much better when the kids have live lessons and they can follow like a regular routine. So, it was, although, I mean, they also did say it can be hard for teachers to be constantly online. So, you know, it's kind of swings and roundabouts, but generally they did prefer live lessons. And that was interesting to see, given how it has been a slightly controversial topic when it comes to the people sort of making policy and judging how schools are getting on.
You think they did, though? Because, I mean, I know it was the most popular option, so that's what we've gone on. But 39% saying, I mean, that's another 60%. Presumably didn't or opted for something, because I mean it surprised me that it was the most popular option. I guess it kind of stands to reason, because it's the easiest way to replicate what you're doing on this in a classroom. But, you know, early on, the first lockdown, it was really controversial, wasn't it, when the assumption from the public that you should just be able to, you know, drop everything and then be able to replicate what you're doing in school online, and teachers were getting a load of flack on it, and kind of us putting social media stuff about live lessons. We had to be quite careful not to offend our readers. So I don't know if it's that things have changed, or maybe there's still, you know, there's a kind of silent majority that just still aren't that keen.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So it was 39% said it was their favourite, which obviously means there's about 60% who chose something else. But I think it was interesting to see that was the preferred choice by far when it came to, you know, breaking the other options down. So it was 39% liked live lessons versus 19 liked pre-recorded. So it's quite a lot more seemed to be showing their support for that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's right. It has kind of been a little bit controversial today, and as the comments sort of reflect, it does put pressure on teachers to an extent in a different way maybe than pre-recorded lessons do. So
I've heard that parents prefer pre-recorded lessons, because then they can do it with their child when they want, not according to a time zone.
They fit it around their day.
But that's just one head teacher telling me. It's not a
I was struck by the very small amount of teachers that said that they found other platforms like pre-recorded lessons as effective. They obviously, well, I suppose it stands to reason that they prefer to kind of curate their own content for the to suit their people's needs. But there's just 4% said that they preferred sort of. I'm not mentioning any particular providers, but sort of lessons that are provided by other platforms rather than their own.
Professional pride that you, I mean,
yeah.
I guess if you did, then you'll be doing yourself out of a job.
Yeah, that's true.
Catherine, what I mean, your story today about the highlights and pitfalls of remote teaching. What were those?
So it was really interesting. I mean, a number of things kind of came up, like sort of one of the key things, which I think we've heard before, is the fact that, you know, parents can sometimes kind of interrupt online live learning. So over a quarter of teachers in our survey said, so I think it was like 25.3%, but they said that parents could interrupt lessons or possibly tell people's the answers. And then there were some funny responses as well. So some teachers reporting that pupils attended lessons wearing pajamas, although I think one teacher, which I've quoted in the article, said that they also sometimes wore pajamas. So it's I think, you know, it's obviously a strange situation, but it seemed to have kind of both positives and negatives. So there were more teachers reporting that they'd had like really positive feedback from parents and families about the lessons than criticism. I think it was something like 8%. I'll check that now. But I think it was only about 8% who said that they had had negative feedback from parents on their lessons. And, you know, and then very small numbers like reporting kind of more serious things. So 4.5% said they'd had lessons interrupted by hackers, but that's not high. So I think what came across was that some people were actually enjoying the live lessons or felt they'd got to grips with it. But obviously, I think, you know, we've reported before some of these concerns, but I think in terms of engagement, it can be really hard to gauge that. So I saw a couple of comments sort of saying that it was like a sea of black screens or a sea of dots when they were teaching, and they felt like they were sort of delivering a monologue without very much feedback from students. And also quite a few people, what seemed a general trend, which makes sense actually, is for older students, it seemed to work much better. So for younger secondary and also primary, I think the whole process of kind of engaging online and also possibly like typing in responses into an online platform is obviously much more difficult. Whereas for GCSE students, sixth formers, it's something that they're probably quite used to. So it's a mixed set of responses. We obviously went in for the headline on the fact that I think it was one primary teacher said that they'd had to tell a student off for using disco lights in the background of a lesson. So, you know, I think what also came across is some teachers were saying, you know, that there are some students who try and disrupt, but that also, you know, would happen in a classroom setting as well. And it's kind of about managing that.
You can just mute a student who's disruptive.
I was going to say, yeah. I'm sure they quite like that option in physical classrooms.
Can I ask you about that, Dave? Why it's easier to keep control? Because I would have thought it'd be harder because you don't know what they're all doing, but you can just shut them up. Is that,
well, I can only imagine it was, you know, like because pupils are not physically with each other, it's less easy for them to be distracted by their neighbour or, you know, somebody in the desk behind them or in front of them. So they're all kind of individually on their own. And I suppose that would make them easy to handle as if it's a big sort of difficult class.
Unless they're messing each other on WhatsApp, as they say. And
well, yeah.
I have heard from children I know what can some of the things I can do. But so anyway, yeah.
No, but, it's worth. I'm sure we're going to find out a lot more about this, about the pros and cons of it. Right. Okay. So the man of the moment is our new Education Recovery Commissioner, or catch-up czar, Sir Kevin Collins. And Amy, you've written a few stories about him this week, quite a few in fact, and we've learned a lot more about him, haven't we? Do we know a bit more about his role now?
Yeah, so a couple of developments this week. I was lucky enough to speak to Sir Kevin earlier in the week and find out a little bit more about his vision for the role. But we also had some more details revealed by the DfE about exactly sort of what it will entail, because that was slightly unclear up till this week, exactly what his remit will be. One of the things we found out is that he'll be appointed for an initial 9 months. And then there'll be the option to extend that by another 9 months afterwards. So that gives an idea of kind of the timescale of his appointment. But not only that, we got a little bit detailed about what he will and interestingly, what he won't kind of have any say over. So one of the lines in the DfE document that was released this week was that he will have no role in deciding how GCSE and A-level grades are awarded in 2021, for example, which, you know, is interesting to sort of note. And also he's not going to have any say over when schools return or the delivery of devices to facilitate remote education. And that last point I thought was pretty interesting, given that he's looking at catch up, and to an extent, you know, he'll be managing the existing catch up effort, a lot of which is to do with ensuring students can learn at home. So the fact that he won't have any, his role won't kind of overlap with that free laptop scheme is quite interesting to me. But he's got plenty to be getting on with, as we established when I spoke to him. And I think the main takeaway that I had from, I mean, there were lots and lots of things that we ended up writing about, but I kind of really noticed that he is very keen to maintain his independence. So one of the most sort of powerful lines from the interview was he said, "No one controls the advice I give." So he might not be the person who makes the final decisions about policy, but he's absolutely adamant that he will maintain his independence from the government when he is giving that advice. And that, I suppose, would make sense given his huge expertise in the education sector.
How do you think he came across then? How did he come across? Do you know, like, nice guy, sort of quite placid, or was he?
Unfortunately, you know, we didn't have a huge amount of time with him, so I would have liked to chat to him a little bit more to get more of a sense of what he was like. But no, he was, it was good to speak to. He was very clear about what he wanted to do, he was quite decisive. For example, about the situation with funding, he said that when I asked him, is he hopeful of more money from the Treasury? Because obviously, we know we've had £1.3 billion already announced for catch-up. Does he think we need more? He just said, short answer, yes. So it's quite straightforward. He knows.
That presumably means it's already there, I guess.
I think the frustrating thing was he's not really able to go into detail at the moment about exactly what the policy plans will be. So we've heard a lot about what they might look like. Summer schools, longer school days, that sort of thing. At this stage, I assume, because nothing has been finalised yet, he can't tell us exactly what those plans are. So that was sort of the hole, I think, that we had missing from
a suggestion. More teaching time went down like a lead balloon, didn't it? I think on with teachers, social media, etc.
Yeah, there was a. He did say that. That was in his first interview in the new role. He said that he would that teachers would likely need to increase learning time for pupils. But without giving too much more detail about that, I think it was an interesting sort of reaction. People not too sure whether. I mean, the unions, especially the heads' unions, came back and said, really reiterated that it's about quality over quantity of learning time. And there was definitely kind of an initial shock at the idea that, you know, potentially we could just be looking at more time as opposed to investing in what really works. But
they described it as a gimmick, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the word they'd use?
Gimmick? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're more against gimmicks.
What shocked me a bit was, which you mentioned, Amy, was the fact that his role hasn't got anything to do with the grading, has it? Mm-hmm. With GCSE and A level grade, they were quite specific on that. But yet we've been waiting for 2 months for this expert group to come along that was supposed to be looking at grading, and that's no longer being set up. And the reason for that apparently is that Sir Kevin's been appointed, but he won't cover that. So I guess that whole area's just been lost.
It's a really good point. I mean, we know, we had it confirmed from the DfE this week that nobody was ever appointed to that group. So it very much never came into existence, despite it being a couple of months since the announcement. And now, obviously, that will, you know, he's kind of absorbing the work that they were going to do. But who exactly now is going to be in charge of coming up with this plan for qualifications this year? It remains unclear, which is slightly disconcerting.
But he can't be absorbing the work they're going to do, can he? Because the group was specifically about grading. So,
well, I thought the group was about how they were going to, the measures they were going to take with exams, you know, like optionality and
the group. It was specifically looking at how you level up within the grading system, how you look at the divergence between learning time between different pupils around the country. Last year in the north, lots more pupils were off school because there were higher levels of COVID at one point than in other areas.
And how special considerations for those pupils and all that sort of thing.
When that was announced, which sort of kind of early December, there were lots of sort of interesting ideas being floated, like, for example, doing like some sort of traffic light system for grades to show, you know, exactly how much time had been lost. So it is quite strange that seems to, you know, all those ideas seem to have disappeared a little bit. And, you know, at the moment, nothing's been confirmed and it doesn't look necessarily like anything's going to happen to adjust grades in any way to show that.
It was more accompanying grades, wasn't it, rather than actually adjusting them? It was
something
alongside them,
kind of like an asterisk was the idea, I think. I mean, there were some, you know, I seem to remember at the time that there was some discussion about how that could potentially be unhelpful to students, like, you know, that they're already in a very strange year, and if they have a grade and then an asterisk, will employers and universities really have any idea what that means, or even possibly, you know, in some way think that grade is less credible? But it was an idea to not adjust the grade itself, but to show the fact that some areas, some students would have had much less learning time than others, and that idea seems to have kind of, I don't know, disappeared into the other really now.
But people said at the time that when they said that they were going to announce an expert group, that most thorny of issues had been kicked into the long grass, and it now seems like they've kicked it so far into long grass they can't find it, because they're hoping no one else can as well.
Was there anything Kevin Collins wouldn't talk about, Amy, that you asked him?
Yeah, so I mean, we sort of were aware going into the interview that we weren't going to be able to get much detail on kind of the policy side of things. So we, for example, you know, I don't know exactly what the catch-up plans will look like in detail, because that's all yet to be announced. But generally, he was quite happy to answer. I mean, there was one thing I asked him. I did say, you know, looking at, you know, this is the point at which you're taking over, looking before then, is there anything that you think, you know, what's your view on how the Department for Education has handled the coronavirus crisis so far, you know, if they made any mistakes? And he was, you know, he was quite keen not to point any fingers, I think they were his words. So he didn't really want to engage with analysing what could have been done differently up to this stage, which was quite interesting. I suppose he very much wants to look forward and not, you know, with his plans and kind of now start his own sort of journey with the catch up. So so I couldn't really get him to say a whole lot on that, otherwise he was quite open, and it was good to kind of hear get a sense for the vision he has for what's to come, even if we couldn't get too much detail on it.
Okay, well, all your stories are on the website, and you've done about five, I think, this week, have you, Amy?
I've lost count, but there's quite a few to look through. So I'd start with, if you're going to read one, there was the main announcement on, the main point he made about funding, the fact they needed more funding, and also this background piece we did more talking about, the interview as a whole, where he said no one controls the advice I give. So I'd start with those.
We're at the end finally, I think, now, are we? Mary Louise, how are teachers being coached to think like athletes?
Well, this is news from the Youth Sport Trust charity that in the week after half term, they're running an initiative called Empathy Week, or they're taking part in that initiative. And as part of that, they're putting a whole week of free sessions for teachers on their website to help, primarily to help teachers delivering PE to think about how they can improve resilience and well-being for their pupils. But they've also said that the sessions are will be aimed more generally at teachers to help them with their well-being. One session is going to be run by no less than the world champion Thai boxer Rachel McKenzie. She's going to be on a Wednesday lunchtime, and she'll be running a session aimed at helping teachers to think like an athlete. And she's going to be sharing tips that she advice that she, it was sort of stuff that she used to do when she was preparing for a bout for the world championships, including meditation techniques and kind of how she managed her emotions, just kind of ways to kind of deal with stress, especially at the moment that teachers are dealing with at the moment. A spokesman for the charity said Rachel will talk about the fight or flight response and how this will impact teacher well-being. It will ultimately help teachers to think like an athlete. So there you go. I might see if I can take part myself.
I might see if I can tune into that.
Although I already think like an athlete, to be fair.
Well, thanks for listening, and see you soon. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.